yet, by God's grace. Pray for me. Okay. Well, thank you. It's a joy for me to be here. I'm honored. And it is Father Silawan's down in Cañones' fault that I am here. Because once Father Silawan told me I need to call you and ask you, I knew I was done. Right? I was like, okay, now I can't say no. Even if I won't. So here I am, by God's grace. And I appreciate you. Not that I think that I'm going to bring to you anything exceptional. But, you know, we're in America, where we are, where God has intended that we would be. And Father Roman Braga, he says there's a purpose, a divine purpose, about where we are and where we exist, where we are now. And we don't necessarily, in the modern view, tend to view ourselves that way, that I'm in the place where God has put me, in the time where God has put me, for a reason. And God knew that reason, the scriptures tell us, from before he created the world, right? Before, you know, he made each one of us. And that doesn't mean it's going to be necessarily something grand or spectacular as we think of it in those terms. But Father Roman Braga, again, he says that there is a reason and a purpose for where we are and what we are doing. And God has put us there for that intention. And our whole journey is towards that, towards Christ. And so we have the general topic, the encounter with Christ. Because ultimately, I mean, what are my words going to really do? Maybe they'll do something. I don't expect too much because I'm not that exceptional myself. Just try to be faithful where I am. and that's task enough many times for me in the span of things. But I guess what I'm going to start with is journey, right? We all came here. Some of us are converts. Although I have this suspicion, Father, that God, I mean, what God is the hunter of souls. And he's always after us. He's the hunter of mankind. That's why Christ came and died on the cross. That's why God didn't abandon us in our sin and in our iniquity, right? But he was always hunting after. St. John Chrysostom has this analogy. He says, as we were fleeing far from God, God ran after us. So he makes this analogy of God chasing us down, as it were. So we're trying to, you know, book it through our fall, and God's like, no, I'm going to chase you down. And he's like reaching out almost to tackle humanity, us. So as we were attempting to flee far from us, God was on the chase. He wasn't turning himself away. He was doing everything. You know, many of you know Father Anthony Carbo, Memory Eternal, and he would do his famous things. Did you ever see him do his thing with the chairs, right? God's always turning it around. Man's trying to turn around, and so he had this whole thing. I'm not going to, because I want to do it justice. Father Anthony Carbo is the one who could do that justice. And so, but and this whole thing where it was turning. God's always turning the chair. Whenever man's turning the chair the other way, God's turning his chair, putting it right in front, back there. Here I am. And I think if we look at whatever our journey is, that's what God does with us. And I was talking to Father, and he realized it was interesting, and I was thinking about this, and that he mentioned what you said you had your... was baptized Orthodox, you realized. Your father.
Yeah.
Back in the line. Not that every one of us has, but it's interesting. My grandmother, who's 100, but she's Greek, right? No one believes me. The Greeks don't believe me. I have a Greek grandmother. I've tried to say that, and they're like... One time I had some funny stories. I like stories, and I love rabbit trails, okay? The two gentlemen that came with me, they've been at Bible study, they understand. My mind is like a web of, you know, if you go down into a basement and there's all these webs going everywhere, that's kind of my mind. So it kind of works that way, so forgive me. but my grandma, she's 100 years old. She's Greek. Greeks don't believe me, but that's okay. She's actually Cappadocian. Right? So her family came from Cappadocia, and her village was just south, actually, or I think it was just south of the village where St. Arsenius of Cappadocia was and St. Paisius. So, and she married my Irish Catholic grandfather. She actually became Roman Catholic. Later in her life, she became Orthodox again. But it's interesting how, we have these things that come back that get us. We don't think of it much in the modern age, but we're very connected. As much as we want to, the age is trying to disconnect us, right? Uproot us. Because, it's after the rootless man. We were talking about this on the way over. Just everything's trying to upheaval. We see it all over the world. Rooting people, uprooting. But God's always rerooting and regrounding, right? He's always calling back and regathering, right? He's unifying while the enemy is dispersing. And so it was interesting to me. I've met a number, not everyone, but there's an interesting journey where you think, well, man, I was just converted. And you're like, oh, what did you say earlier? That it wasn't me.
Oh, I used to say, here's all the ins and outs of how we came into the Orthodox Church.
Right.
Now I just say, by the prayers of our forebears.
Exactly. Yeah. It's interesting because I think, well, you know what? I was probably done anyway because all my Cappadocia and Orthodox relatives are like, well, we better not pay for this guy. Oh, I needed it. And the other thing is I remember is just a few stories. I like stories, so forgive me. And there's a point. Hopefully we're journeying somewhere. But when I was in Ukraine as a Protestant missionary, I was young. I mean, my parents were the real missionaries. I was along for the ride. When they decided to tell me that we were going to go to Ukraine, I was 16. So, and I was a Central Coast California surfer. So you can imagine. That looked like if you knew a Central Coast California surfer, you would understand. So I thought, wow. I was like, oh, man. Be trippy. Sure, I'll go to Ukraine. right after the Soviet Union fell, and so we caught that unique vision of perestroika because we were there. My job was to stand in the bread line, and my sister's job was to stand in the milk line. Completely new experiences for an American from Central Coast, California. We didn't stand in bread lines. But one of the things that happened, I had this young fellow that latched on. He liked Americans, which a lot of people at that time did. And I had to go to Kiev. And he said, oh, when we go to Kiev, because we got to go to this place. There's this place. He's like, go underground. Go underground. And they have dead people everywhere. I said, what? No way. He's like, I'm serious. I'll show you. I was like, yeah, I gotta see that. So we go. It's Kiev Cave Lavra.
Yeah.
Kiev Cave Lavra. She's like, let's go down there. So here I am, 16, 17. They give you the candle, and you start going down the stairs. And then I'm like, oh, they do. Dead people everywhere. What in the world? So I'd wander hours. And then he'd be like, yeah, look at this guy. See his hands? They're not falling apart. I was like, what in the world? Mine's being blown. Explosions. And the underground chapels. I mean, so every time I went to Kiev, I was like a moth to light. I didn't know why. I would just go like, I'd go to the Kiev Lavra, get the candle, descend into it. So that's the other thing. So then I knew all of a sudden, when I became Orthodox, I was like, I couldn't help. Why? Because those saints in Kiev Cave Lavra, they're like, oh boy, we better pray for this one. He needs a lot of help, which I did. And so I'm sure that because the saints are that way. It's not necessarily we do, we ask them, but they also are energizing with God's divine energy. And they're always working in the world around us, right? Because God is active. God is always active. That's the only reason we could say the world is still here, right? Because God is the force keeping it together while we are actively, through our sin, trying to destroy it all. And we see manifestations of that all around us right now. But the saints are participating in that very life of Christ. That's why they're so important. And so, you know, when we make those journeys, there's lots of things that are happening on a level that is much deeper than just our understanding. And of course, when we come to Orthodoxy, back in the day when we read books, and there wasn't goofy priests on the internet like myself, you know, we think, oh, I read my way to Orthodoxy. But then I started, like, Father, I was so glad you said that, Father Gregor, because you come to a point, like, did I really do that? And in some sense, well, it was part of it, but I didn't really do that. There was something much deeper happening. Something working on a level that, we're used to working up here in, you know, whatever we'll call it, the Western world, which is fine. That's good. There's a place for that. But ultimately, the journey that we're after is the journey of the heart, right? As Proverbs says, my son, give me what? Your heart. Why? Because wherever the heart is, the scriptures tell us, as Christ says, wherever your heart is, what? There your treasure will be also, right? Interesting, I stumbled upon not long ago. It's fascinating to me. Still kind of investigating. It's a little, you know, of course, the medical world sees it as a little fringe. But there was a cardiologist. He was a Spanish fellow. Again, this is my love of rabbit trails, okay? So forgive me. It's like a mosaic, okay? Hopefully it makes a picture in the end. But he did a lot of research just on the heart. And he objected to the kind of the typical, we would say, presentation of it as just an organ that's pumping blood through us. Of course, understand, but he started realizing that the hearts and even the cells of the heart, he said, are transmitting. And he began to document this, and that they're actually transmitting and receiving an energy from outside of it, right? So the very organ of the heart, which of course in modern science, which, you know, whatever it is, but it looks at man as just a biological machine most of the time. But he's saying there's something much deeper going on, that the cells actually have little antennas, little transmitters that are sending and receiving, and that the electricity that is pumping the heart, he analyzes and says, isn't always coming directly from the heart, but is an outside source also. Wow, that's very fascinating. Because in some way, it aligns very well with the Orthodox understanding of the heart. Right? The heart being the center of who we are and receiving the divine uncreated energies of God. That the heart isn't just self-sustaining, but it's dependent also on things outside of us. It's like, well, that's fascinating. Fascinating. I can't scientifically. It's not my place. I can't do it. I'm not a cardiologist. I just find it interesting. So I'm sharing it with you. But we see the significance of that heart, right? That heart and that encounter with Christ. And ultimately, that's what we're after in the church. I try to reiterate to all the people coming in my church just a little bit more. So at my journey, right, there's the saints. They see this poor surfer, and they pray for me. Probably my ancestors, like Father Gregory, praying for us. So there's a lot of things happening, supporting things that we don't necessarily able to put our intellectual finger on in the modern sense of that. But it's happening on a much deeper fundamental level. And guiding, we understand it as the providence of God. Eventually, I made my way to the church, right? And, of course, I've been in Pueblo for 15 years. When I first got there, Pueblo was one of those, it's been there since 1903. When I arrived, it was all what they called the old timers. and I buried them all. They were all a bunch, you know, descendants of the Serbs and the Russians, Carpathian Russians, that came over to serve in the steel mill of Pueblo and the surrounding mines, right? A lot of mining that happened. And when I came, they were all there, the descendants. Beautiful people, old timers, right? So if you've been in a parish, Slavic parish particularly, you'll know what I'm talking about. Beautiful people, hardworking, you know, the sons and daughters of the steel workers, right? And so there is there. There's something innate. I miss that. The church is very different now. It's like it's been terraformed. It's led by a convert, whatever this means, right? Most now it's almost all converts. All of the old timers are dead. In some sense, it's a tragedy. I lament it to God. Because we miss something. Just something beautiful that they brought. That is really orthodoxy of the heart. And we come in, and it's great. But I've realized what I learned from them, from other people, is we need that. I couldn't sit down with some of them, and they couldn't talk to me about, all of the in and outs of the hypostatic union or, things like that. But they understood. They felt something on a deeper level, right? And I think in the long run, like traveling back to Ukraine, going to the villages, it's a similar experience. Because these people, first and foremost, knew God, right? They knew God. They encountered him. They encountered him in the liturgy. They encountered him in prayer. And then they tried to live that encounter. It was imperfect, as it is many times in our own lives. But that was they knew somehow that's the point. That's the point. When I came in, just as an example, because here I am speaking, so... the point was, I'm looking for something authentic, right? Not a bad thing, I'm looking for this, I read my way, but in doing so, sometimes we miss that, those deeper things of the heart. Maybe that's not everyone's experience, but we come in, we have to reground the heart. The mind is in some sense in the information age. So overactive. And that's why in Orthodoxy we speak about rooting the mind in the heart. And then being able to go on that journey of the heart. And those old timers, they knew it. They stuck with it. Goofy priests, whatever, come and go. They were still there. The newbie, fresh out of seminary, convert priests, they're sent... Who's this joker? What's he know? We've been Orthodox our whole life. They were the most, I converted with them. So there's some backstory. I converted in Pueblo. So they knew me even, right? And then they send the convert kid of Pueblo back as the priest in Pueblo. I don't know who thought to do that, but it was out of my ball game. So... but they still, okay, here he is. He's the priest. Somehow he'll make it. Very organic. Very supporting. Father, it'll be all right. And it is. It is, ultimately. Forgive me, I tear up when I think about them. It's like you can see them still. So, anyway. I'll stop thinking about it, and I'll just start crying. And then I'll be a sap up here crying. Right, such a sap. I am. I'm a sap. But nonetheless, there's something very beautiful. And I know, there's a lot of... I don't know everyone here, so I think it's... there's a difference. You get in the parish, and you learn it. You start learning the people. You come in, and these things. And so I hope I say something... It will be at least of a little benefit. And hopefully if we're speaking of Christ, there's benefit in speaking of Christ, right? So that journey of the heart, I think, is one of the most important things that we can go on. And it's the most difficult one. Because it's easy to be, as it were, in the mind. It's easy, I tell the new fellows coming in, don't do it. Don't be online trying to argue orthodoxy. Just stop. It's not where it's found, right? You're not going to find it. It has to be lived. It has to be experienced. It's life. It's life. And without that life, we just become... Father Seraphim Rose tells us, if in some of his writings, he says, we have a danger to just make a sect out of orthodoxy, right? We just make it like this informational thing. He says, all we're doing is offering another sect... And the vast array of sects in America. He says, that's not what we need. what the world needs, what we all need first and foremost, is that living encounter with the living God in our hearts. And that's at the point of the liturgy, the point of all the sacraments, the mysteries, everything is for this one goal, that we would become, as the scriptures tell us, as St. Paul tells us, temples indwelt by the Holy Spirit. Now, of course, for Orthodox, that's dynamic. It's an ever-being process. We're ever acquiring the grace of the Holy Spirit, right? Ever encountering the living God, because he's vast and eternal, right? One of the things that used to perplex me as a Protestant coming out of a kind of whatever, I don't even know what to call it, it was Vineyard Charismatic / appendix astrophy, you know, thing. But, you know, it was big into like, oh, you got to be filled with the Holy Spirit, which is very true. We need that, right? But you would go from somehow not having the Holy Spirit to having the Holy Spirit. And they're like, how does that work? How do we go from I'm not saved to I'm saved all of a sudden? You know, not to bash on it, but it becomes a static system, right? Because God is ever expanding. Right? In our journey into God, it's going deeper and deeper. And really, the deeper we go into the heart, the more that it expands before us. Because the saints tell us that there's one place in the whole world that is made to expand, purposely created to expand with God. And that is the human heart. And it is there that we meet God. He says, what is it, St. Macarius the Great, I believe he says, paraphrasing, but he says, the heart, being such a small thing, yet it contains the angels in heaven and even communion with God himself. And so when we understand that all of Greatland, all of everything that we have, is a beckoning of God constantly into that union with him. And it's one thing to talk about it. I guess it's nice, you know, and it's good. But my encouragement to you is keep after that. And on that journey with Christ, we never know what is guiding us. Sometimes in retrospect, we understand, right? For me, it takes a lot longer because I'm dim-witted and dull, and I'm hard-headed. My wife is always reminding me that I'm a stubborn Irishman, so I have that to live with also. Quarter Greek, but no one believes me that I'm a quarter Greek, so I just stick with the Irish part, because everyone believes that I'm Irish, right? So I can convince people of that. But anyway... this is one of the things. So I want to, I guess, let's see, how long am I supposed to keep talking? I do have things prepared. I meander. I like to meander, but I do have a goal. But I want to, just because we just looked at it, and it's one of those beautiful things. So I do have the scriptures here. So I'm going to just reference. In the beginning, we have on that last Sunday, we had from John. I always think it's a beautiful, because what is it, one of the first encounters with Christ? And how do we begin Great Lent? On the Sunday of Orthodoxy, of all the Sundays, what do we read about? What did we just read? Last Sunday, right? It was Christ encountering who? Some of the first disciples. And so we enter into Great Lent, but also the Sunday of Orthodoxy, right? What's the significance? The significance is an encounter with the living God. And really, that's what the point of Sunday of Orthodoxy is. That's the point of being a Christian on this earth, is to encounter the living God, to enter into communion with him by grace, and to be transformed. That's not easy. It's hard. Right? And one of the things that I encourage, and people coming in, because we get excited, and I know because maybe not everyone has done, but you know, you get converted, it's like sensory overload, And I remember doing it. It's like, sorry, I'll prove that I'm just part of the media generation also, because I am, so I'm not distinct from that. But it's like Buzz Lightyear meeting himself in the toy aisle again, right? When he's delusional and thinks he's a toy, right? And anyway, if anyone knows that, it's because I raised 5 children. And he says, please tell me I was never this delusional, right? Anyway, sometimes you realize that, right? You're like, oh, well, you know, I'll go through different things. So there's my media. But we get excited and we want everything's now, you know. I still have, ever passed. Father, can I have your blessing to get the Philokalia? Absolutely not. Do not do that. Don't buy it. Don't start reading it. Here, read these other books instead, please. Okay? It's beautiful and incredible, but the thing is there's a whole method, a whole journey of the heart that went into those things. It's not just I'm reading the magic formula, right? Unless we start traveling along that path of incarnation ourselves, then it just becomes, a lot of times, not saying anyone in this room, I don't know, but I observe elsewhere, being a priest that is online, it has its plus and minuses, it's a terrible place. But you see, some people, they're just like, yeah, locked and loaded now with my Orthodox ammo, you know, and then they just go hunting, heretic, you know, papist, you know, it's like, no, it's not hunt heretic day. It's not, how's that going to, what are we going to do there? Sure, it's wrong. There's heresy. Absolutely. All of these things are very true. But that's not going to, as it were, be the thing that draws people into life. Okay, and we can't. I had to. One of the things I wanted, because I wanted authentic, right, which is not a bad thing. It's in our name, orthodoxy. I wanted that, but it's in the long run, that is right worship. Right, worship is an encounter with the living God. It's not just right information. Right. Because all of that right information comes from that living encounter with the living God. And we see that as we open up in John. I mean, you guys read it last Sunday. But it's beautiful. It's such a beautiful part because they encounter him. What's the Lord say? Like, where are you staying? Come and see. Come and see. Come and encounter. Right? When Nathanael comes, Nathanael's skeptical. Give me a break. Nazareth, really? Pueblo? And then Jesus just says, no, not Nazareth. Nathanael, I saw you under the fig tree. And he's mind blown. And it's an interesting, but one of the most beautiful, I think there's a few customs here, if we can call it that. But I think it's one of the Arabic, maybe Father Philip, you're familiar with this, but I heard it from an Antiochian priest friend. And it was beautiful. It blew my mind, actually. And he said, well, one of the traditions out of the Middle East is this. Maybe you've heard this. I don't know. But it's absolutely beautiful. It says Nathanael was born around the same time of Christ, which they were of a similar age, and that he was born in the region of Bethlehem, and that when Herod went to send his soldiers, Nathanael's mother hid him under a fig tree and covered him with fig leaves. And that only he and his mom knew that he was rescued from the slaughter of Herod in such a manner. But then when he meets Christ, Christ looks into the deepest part of his heart and reveals to him this thing that only mom and him know. When you were under that fig tree as a helpless baby, hid from the slaughter of Herod, I saw you. I saw you. Because there's, you know, it's good speculation. We have that in Orthodoxy. But there's, you know, what's that mean? What was that? And you'll find a little bit of variation, I think, if you look into that. But that particular story to me is just incredible. Because you see God is watching over, right? Even as that, while all these children are being slaughtered and his mom hides him under that fig tree, I saw you there. I was there, you know. And that's the thing. We have to, you know, as it's hard in this life because we're always programmed. We go out there and the world is haphazard, right? We're given another philosophy. So the world is no longer cohesive. We don't live even in We might even say some kind of pagan cohesive cosmology. We live in a disconnected secular cosmology. That's just the reality. It's where we are. It's where God intended where we would be. He knew that you would be here this day and this hour in this country for those reasons that he knows, but for that purpose that he knows. But when I go out, it's good for me just to realize that we're constantly being disintegrated, right, by the world around us. And that's a purposeful thing. I believe it's very purposeful. It's trying to disintegrate me. Well, God is trying to reintegrate me, right? The world wants me to stay constantly external. And God is saying, no, if you will be whole, you must first journey within. Right? That inner universe, as the saints call it, of the heart. Right? And that's what Christ, when he comes to the earth, that's what he's challenging. He's always challenging that inner reality of the human existence. And our reaction to that, because everyone is reacting to Christ. Was it this last Sunday? Yeah, because we had Sunday of Orthodoxy, so it was before. So this past Sunday. See, I can't believe it's already Sunday of the Cross. They're already halfway. I can't believe it. Well, here we are, by God's grace. But it was last Sunday. See, I'm so blurred. But we read, right? There's the paralytic coming down. And he says, your sins are forgiven you. And the Pharisees say, who's this guy? No one can blaspheme. Who can forgive sins but God alone? And God is seeing the heart of the paralytic and the Pharisee all at that time. And he's challenging in his own way the inner reality of each one. Right? And the paralytic sees and he has a living encounter with the same God. It's not a different person. It's not like there's two different Christs. It's the same Christ. The Pharisee's heart is being challenged. The problem with the Pharisee, as we've been warned about, one of the things is that his heart is around the things of God, around the things of the law, which are the things of God, and yet his heart is no longer being softened by them. And then he encounters the living God incarnate. And he's further hardening his heart against the very Messiah who has come to save not only Israel, but the whole world. Because God is challenging in his own way even the hearts of the Pharisees. And you see, he doesn't just rip them. If you look at the trajectory of Scripture, he works with them. He gives them chance and chance to repent, to let their hearts be hardened. Softened, and it's when they refuse and they let their heart be hardened, then that's when he rips into them in the last chapters of Matthew. You Pharisees, hypocrites, right? Terrible verses to read because, you know, God have mercy on you. God have mercy on us. But this is what God is after. Right? So everything that we have ultimately in the life of Christ around us. Because St. Justin Popovich says the mystery, the ultimate mystery, is the incarnation. The ultimate reality of that mystery is the church. The church is the mystery of Christ incarnate in the world, continually. And each one of us are in different ways, in our different journeys on that encounter, hopefully, with the living God. Really, the journey within to the heart. Father Philip, we were mentioning briefly, which is true. Rome was what converted heart by heart originally. When Christianity went out into the Roman Empire, it encountered something intensely pagan and intensely against it. In some sense, maybe it's not as overt as the Roman Empire, but the world around us is in some sense, neo-pagan, we could say, you know. We had faced a different kind of cult of emperors and other things and powers around us. But the hope is the human heart. And what do we see in our own nation? We see a lot of people here coming in, catechumens, people in Pueblo. I haven't done anything else in Pueblo, really. I'm just in Pueblo because I'm a stubborn Irishman, right? And Pueblo had a high turnover before I came. I like to be boastful because I'm actually a very passionate person. But before I came, see, this is me boasting. Pueblo had a priest turnover that I averaged out to be every 3 years since 1960. So it was and I met someone after I was assigned there. So they're like, "You're in Pueblo? That's a priest-eating parish." I was like, "Oh, that sounds like fun." it's not because I'm great. It's just I can be stubborn. So I just held on. No, I'm going to be the one that holds on to this, right? And by God's grace, God uses the most foolish of us, right? And so there's hope for everyone. But in that, you know, we hold on to Christ. By God's grace. Anyway, I've said a few things. I think that's kind of forward. Are there questions? Some interactions? You don't want to just, what is it? Timothy Ware, who would like to tell the story of the guy drooling on and then he realized it was his own voice. So. I don't want that to be me. I've been in Pueblo for 15 years now. Yeah, I converted in Pueblo in 2003. I was the youngest parishioner. The next youngest parishioner, besides my family, was 50 years old at that point. So, and I was in my early 20s. So.
I have a question about what you mean by internal and external
Pueblo. Sure.
Because as someone who's from the ABD,
yes.
It very much turns you inside.
Sure. Sure. What do you mean? How do you see it as turning you inside? I'm just curious.
It makes you think about yourself and your issues become what makes you like worth paying attention to most of the time. And so you pay attention to like everything that's wrong with you and everyone that's hurting you, everything that's coming against you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Okay. And so, yeah, I mean, in the internal, I mean, we can internalize things, I think. In the world around, I would say, I mean, not to be, so hopefully I understand. If I don't, then just ask more questions. I'd say we a lot, not you, generally speaking, we see in the world around us, we're trained to, in some sense, in a different level, internalize and then emotionally react. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of emotional reaction, which there's an internalization. And a lot of the world around us, my opinion, I'm just going to say it in those terms, is fueled by our human emotions, right? And then we react against other group. And so then in our own society, because that's where I am, you know, we see this constant chain of action, reaction, right? That group, that's group, you know. So Christ says this. So I'll use this. I'll try to use Christ's analogy. And he says, whoever hears my commandments and does them is like what? Someone who built on what? A rock. So I've done construction. I've had jackhammers to go through rock, which is their handy tools for going through rock. And I've been jackhammering rocks before, and I thought, my gosh, I could not imagine pickaxing this thing. It would be a very laborious task, right? So putting a foundation on a rock is a hard thing. It's hard. It takes sweat. It takes discipline. Running a jackhammer is hard enough, if anyone would run a jackhammer. On hard ground. But to do that manual labor, and when Christ was giving that parable, that's exactly what he meant. That's exactly the picture that he meant. Digging on rock. And he says, digging on sand, then he says the other one, he says, and when it was, and he kind of does them, we're like, okay, you know, throws up. And so, my impression, maybe not opinion, it's my impression, which then lead to opinions inevitably, you know, we like in the West, you know, in my own heart, when I try to examine, you know, because I'm part of the milieu around me, I can't escape that. That's my destiny. Right? Destiny is to be here today with the people that I am part of, and the country that I'm part of. I've traveled a little bit, but nonetheless, here it is. Right? But we like sand, right? Because sandcastles are fun and sandcastles are easy, right? And they go up quick, right? It's easy. Look what I accomplished. It went up so quickly, right? But ultimately, if you build on sand, Christ says, and anyone in construction knows this, it'll be easy and it'll go up quick, but it's not going to stand. It won't last. And so to go internally, as we're saying, as the Christians, the journey of the heart that the saints speak about, into the interior universe, which is a phrase that Father Roman Braga takes from the Fathers. But to get there is like digging on rock, right? Because it takes something to go very deep and to face the deeper parts of who I am, okay? Of who I am. Not what is being reflected to me. I'm not saying this is you at all. Just generally, not the perceptions of myself that I would like to have. And not we're a culture of identities. I mean, you know, I identify as this, I identify as this. Everyone identifies as something, you know. Okay, whatever. But it's not about identity. But we like to have something reflected back to us of our identity. But all of these things, although maybe we chip a little bit away, there's still a deep, deep place where we have to go. And that's where the saints went. I mean, why is it, for instance, that most of the saints who are in commune with the living God, but at the same time, they're saying, God, you know, I'm not, they see themselves as just, Lord, have mercy on me, a sinner. And they're not just saying that. Some rote thing. They're not trying to be poetic. You know, when seeing Isaac the Syrian, I don't know if I brought it with me, when he wrote, you know, his spiritual psalter, he's not like, I'm going to write something super poetic right now. You know, watch this. He's writing from his heart. He's just, it's like coming out of him. Why? Because that was the internal. He went so deep into the and there, once you work through and you lay that foundation, then when the storms and the rain, but not just that, but we dig down, then we all of a sudden we find from the heart, Christ says, what? Spring forth the springs of what? Living water, right? But first you have to strike the rock, right? That's where you go back to the wilderness and the whole imagery there. What does Moses do? The water comes from what? The rock. Right. And so to access the deep waters of communion with God, which is the whole purpose of our human existence, right? In which then we find that we have to have jobs and we have to deal with banks and we have to do all these accessory things, fine. But bring God with it. We'll talk a little bit more about that. God is everywhere. That's what we see in our prayer. Was everywhere present in what fills all things. So even that, you know, job I have to do for now, God's in it. He's working. There's a spiritual purpose in it. It's not just I got to pay the bills, right? There's a spiritual reality here that I can be in harmony with. You know, it's always amazing to read, for me to read a lot of things. But, you know, the new martyrs, right? Both in Russia, Ukraine, Romania. But a number of them all say the same thing. They say this, those that survived, right? Those that survived. And if you don't know, I'm sure Father Gregory has mentioned that. And I think it's very important for us to understand that the 20th century was the most martyrdom ever for Christians. More Christians were martyred in the 20th century than ever before in human history. Combine all the martyrs of the first 300 years, more martyrs in the 20th century. Right? We live in the time of martyrdom. We do. But what did they say, those that survived those experiences, those that came out alive? Thankfully, God allowed a few to come out alive to speak to us. But what did they say? Most of them said, when I left the prison cell, I venerated it. I kissed it. Because there, I met God. I met God. Right? And that's the thing. What they had to do is God. In some sense, you know, we would think that's, from a human perspective, it's terrible. It's unjust. It's inhumane. All of which is true. But in the midst of the most terrible things, they meet God and are transformed. And that's why the cross stands at the center of Great Lent. Because the cross is, we would say, from a human's perspective, the most unjust, inhumane thing ever. It was a form of capital punishment invented by a pagan government to be one of the most torturous ways to die possible. That's its intent. It's the most epic symbol of human injustice. And yet God says, I'm going to take that. I'm going to take that symbol of absolute human injustice, absolute human cruelty, because they had to sit and think, how can we make these criminals really suffer? And they said, well, we nail them to a cross, and they slowly suffocate as their lungs are filling with blood and they're bleeding out in their hands, and we don't give them any food, and we leave them there for days on end, and either they'll suffocate and their own fluids that collect in their lungs slowly but surely, or they'll bleed out very slowly, which is also very painful. Or they'll die of hunger or thirst. And they had to premeditate it. It was terrible. It was Roman brutality at its finest. And God says, that's it. I'll do that. Why? For the life of the world and for itself. Because I will enter into the very depths of human injustice, of human brutality, of human cruelty, and I will re-sanctify it, thus giving purpose to even the most darkest inclinations that humans can inflict on other humans. Right? Not only that, of course, then he goes into Hades. So, I think in the long run, back to your question, the internal, so there are things, and I think, you know, that can be helpful, that can be helpful things. But ultimately, the heart is found, and that's in silence. Silence. Hezekiah. It's the heart, it's at the heart of the Christian experience in life. You know, it's maybe not everyone, you know, probably the, you know, but maybe not all the younger kids, but it was interesting. Another interesting thing, a number of years ago, not because I think that we'll ever make it to Mars or anything like that, but it was interesting nonetheless because they recruited people, actual study. So if we journey to Mars, right, of course, we love our fantasies in the modern age too. But they paid people to stay in a room with nothing to see how long they could last. At the end of the study, they said, well, you know, maybe one day we'll have the technology because we're so great to go to Mars. The problem will be we're not sure people could psychologically endure a trip to Mars because people today can't, and this is what the study concluded, people today can't be alone with themselves. And I've been talking to, you know, young people, and not all young people, not everyone, but I think it's one person told me, he says, you know what I used to be the most scared about? It's when everything became quiet right when I had to fall asleep. It's the most terrifying time. And that quiet was terrifying. He said, otherwise it was always music, always something had to be going on, right? And you know, it's interesting. I'm not, God help us all, it's not to belittle any of that, just to say this is where we are. This is where we are. And I find sometimes I find myself that way. You know, sometimes I find myself a product of those things that I have to also struggle with. But in some sense, with the struggle of those around us, it gives us hopefully some kind of burden, right, for the world around us. That we're still, as it were, in it, but we have to become not, as it were, of it, so to speak. Right? But our hearts have to ache. And we carry the same broken humanity that needs healing in Christ. And when we look around and we see those symptoms all around it, it's a common symptom. It's not like them. Oh, one of those people, you know, they're so this. Well, no, it's this corporate where we've brought our humanity to. And we're all, that's orthodoxy. It's not them. It's not them. It's here. Right? Rome was one heart by heart, right? And then all of a sudden, when heart by heart, it began to be one, and that tide began to turn. Constantine came, and God worked his miracles. But he worked it after the most phenomenal miracle, which wasn't so much the cross, which was amazing, appearing to Constantine in the sky. But it was because he first worked a miracle in the human hearts of the Roman Empire at large and beyond, right? That when the time came to reveal the cross to Constantine, there was actually a fruitful ground for it to flower in. If it had been any earlier, it would have withered. Right? But God laboriously, patiently, for almost 300 years, worked heart by heart by those with those early pagan Romans. Right? And so he is still today working with us patiently, like a good gardener. Watching over. And even in our own nation, what is our hope? The hope is heart by heart. Heart by heart, our nation will be transformed. But ultimately, that transformation starts here. Right? Paul encounters Christ, the living Christ, on the road to Emmaus. With that encounter, he goes out into the world. And others encounter it. Sometimes, yeah, God uses other people for that encounter. He uses the saints. He uses lots of things, right? So again, God help us. Those things, you know, we can help. And, you know, there's some practical, we can find hopefully good things. But I would say let's remember that the journey to the human heart, it's the most incredible journey that any human being can enter upon. So God helps. Anyway, all right. Any other questions? Anything? Well, I rambled on for an hour. Is that good, Father? Well, thank you for your patience with me.
Father's here, you know, for us, you know. So if anyone has questions, of course, we can take up some more of your time after one-on-one.
Yeah, absolutely. Please do.
We'll be here tomorrow, but if there are any questions, just go ahead. Just, you know.
Yes.
Are you Greek or Irish?
Depends who you ask. I'll tell you a funny story. I love these. Sorry, funny story. So way back. I just became Orthodox. I was, you know, dripping from being the newly Orthodox. And I went to a, you know, Greek Orthodox in Denver. And I was there, and a guy came up to me. Nice man, not like, but it's just funny part, right? It was great. He came up to me, he's like, "You Greek?" Literally. I was like, "I'm going to play my grandmother's card." I said, my grandmother's great. He's like, "Who's your grandfather?" So I said, "My grandfather was Irish." He goes, "Irish." And then he just walked away. So, I'm a quarter Greek, but my mom is Scotch-Irish. My dad was Irish-Greek. So I guess it makes me mostly Irish. And, yeah. There I am. Someone that told me, they're like, well, you look more Greek than, as you look more like the original people of Greece, whatever that means. I don't know. I'm not going to get into that or arguing. I like Cappadocia, right? So, did you have a Harry Boussalis when you were a professor? So, we had a professor, Harry Boussalis. Great guy. I love Harry Boussalis. He was wonderful. My grandmother's maiden name, before they changed it, well, I mean, her father, they changed it, of course, as the immigration people in America always did. If it was it was Sidropoulos. And Harry Boussalis says, that means Iron Man. I said, darn it. She'd just be like, Father Iron Man. That'd be so cool. Or People of Iron is what the immigration means. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Can you tell us a little about the children's books that you've written?
Oh, so one is still available on St. Bridget of Ireland. I did it with Jane Meyer. Some of you follow Orthodox children's books. You might have encountered her name before. She's done a lot of Orthodox children's books. So I illustrated that one. And then a bit before that, there was one at St. Patrick that's harder to find. So the one on St. Bridget, Jane Meyer's been very good about keeping available. The other one I wrote and illustrated, and I'm not as diligent as Jane Meyer, and so it is now a hard-to-find book on the market. But so one was about St. Patrick. So because I, outside of the Key of Cape Labra, and I could tell you, maybe I'll tell you another, I like stories, so maybe I'll save another Ukrainian story for tomorrow. But St. Patrick was one of the things that drew me is I identified with Irish. So I said, I'm going to investigate early Christianity in Ireland as a Protestant. And as I did, I kept encountering something very otherly than what I had. And so St. Patrick was another one of those saints that helped me along. So that's why I wrote the book to speak about St. Patrick.
I'm curious, we hear a lot about the war in Ukraine and what's going on there, but I'm wondering, with your kind of personal connections, tell us a little bit about maybe how the people on the ground, like what can we learn from them? We live in a very insulated world. They're under 5 years of warfare, and I'm just wondering what you see in the church there and what it's done to their spiritual life.
Well, I haven't been to Ukraine since 2019 because of the war. My in-laws are there, and my brother-in-law is still there. Affected by all of the tribulations that war brings to our country, which is terrible. I mean, ultimately, I think in Ukraine, I'll just give you my impressions. That's all it's worth. That you see that I think there's a temptation that we want, you know, we want Orthodoxy to be big and impressive in the world, connected to something big and impressive in the world. But I think in Ukraine we're seeing that it's better when it's not. There's a freedom that, even though the church is persecuted, because it is persecuted in Ukraine, that's fact. It's not Russian propaganda or anything like that. It's fact. The Ukrainian Orthodox Church is persecuted. They're having their churches seized by violent means, by pseudo-Christian groups, and by the government itself. But at the same time, there's this. They were just lamenting, actually, one of the, you know, whatever, Ukrainian officials was lamenting that they're losing the war for the youth in Ukraine to the Orthodox Church. You know, so in spite of their, but we're going to crush it, right? And what's it make it do? It makes people flee to it. Why? Because people want something that is authentic. I think in today's world, it's very important that we guard our spiritual freedom as the church. Because there's plenty of worldly powers that want to utilize the structure of the church for something that is other than spiritual freedom. And I think in Ukraine, you see what happens when the church is through, you could say, situations that she did not necessarily choose, but were imposed upon her, but are bringing a potency of spiritual freedom and life And there's something very amazing there. So I think that's one of the things we can learn, that, you know, our life is in Christ. And ultimately, our hope, that's where our hope is. And that we remember that as much as through history, we've been connected to a lot of grand things in history and orthodoxy. But ultimately, Christ says, my kingdom is not of this world. And I think the church in Ukraine is showing us, in some sense, what that looks like, of being that, maintaining. It's not easy. It's not perfect. But it is a reality. That's my impression. No one's safe. They're under constant threat. Poltava, whatever. The Russian offensive keeps moving, and they keep targeting more and more civilian infrastructure. And so my family lives in Poltava, and it's, numerous cities are becoming more and more targeted by the Russian offensive or war. It's just war. There's always an element of danger. So they just had a major, not too long ago, there was a major missile strike that struck Poltava, not far from where my brother-in-law lives. Thankfully, he was safe, but, you never know. So pray for him.
Any last questions?
Yeah.
What do you think helped you stay in a place like Buffalo for as long as you did? I find it hard to force myself to stay in a certain area or state. I personally moved around a lot. And I know that building a house on a rock is really difficult. But I could do it, but it's kind of hard to
figure out when to stay or when to leave. Sure. What mentality helps? Well, I think, sometimes on the secular, I don't think there's really a distinction. I'm just using it as a convenience, okay? So sometimes in our secular life, a job, whatever, there might be a better job opportunity somewhere else. And we can evaluate those, right? The commitment might not. And that takes wisdom. Consultation with those that we trust in spiritual authority. Going in as a priest, when I left seminary, the dean at that time was Father Addy, a beautiful man, Alexander Addy. And he told me something. He says, listen, because it doesn't matter where you're sent, wherever you go, make paradise. Wherever you go, make paradise. And that I think on a spiritual level, and then even as a priest, was kind of what helped me hang on public. Because if I'm being honest, and you can post this, there were times, I was going to be done. I'm like, I'm done with this. It's dumb, I'm underpaid, over, all of those things. You just get attacked, priests are attacked, pray for your priests, right? And you let the logismoi start eating at you, or you feel like a failure. Why isn't it growing more? I've been here, I'm just doing more funerals than I am doing baptisms, right? I'm here, I'm working my butt off, God, what are you doing, And you have these things, these internal struggles. I don't think we have to be so... it's the reality of our human messiness. When you read the Psalms, that's what exactly David's doing. He's wrestling with God. Not blaming. We don't want to get into blaming. But we can wrestle with these things. And I think sometimes that's exactly what we have to do. Because I think that is part of the journey of the heart. And I don't think it's there because I'm anything. But that honestly, what I kept coming back to I mean, I had some, you know, early on, won't get into it, but I mean, a lot changed after COVID. But before COVID, I mean, I came over here frequently. Some of you might remember I was much younger. I didn't have as much gray. But I'd come over for the Feast of St. Andrew quite frequently for Father Anthony Carbo. Because he told me I had to. He's like, you have to come to everyone else's feast too that you can be. Sure, I will do that. Right, I'm just the new guy. So yes, I will do that. So there was, you know, in the deanery, and to Father Anthony's credit, he really tried to build that community. Even traveling over here, and I appreciated that. So but on some level, when you're there grinding every day, and the other priest has his own work and those things to do, one of those things was wherever you go, you have to make it paradise. And then I would think of, well, not that I'm in a monastic, I'm not. I'm married, I have 5 children, so I'm obviously not monastic. But nonetheless, spiritual principles apply on both sides of the spiritual community, right? And one of them is they're like, well, you know, if you're going to grow, be where you are as best as you can, right? And there's, you know, so for myself, I'm not saying that applies to everyone or anything like that, but it's what I had to hold on. And maybe we'll just call it an emotional investment with the older people there. I came in, they were all the people I was a little newborn, little convert baby, and they were the ones changing my diaper and, you know, doing all this stuff as a new convert before I went off to seminary, you know. And then they decided to send me back to Pueblo. And so I think then also just there, I was like, I got to be here for these people, you know. So that was my mentality. I mean, I just kind of stuck it out. And I don't know, sometimes I don't, my life's told, it's like sometimes you don't know when to give up. Like, well, okay, sometimes I don't. But probably personality a little bit too. I'm just like, I'm going to hold on.
Do you have a lot more young families there now?
We do. We're probably, I mean, it's a completely new parish, I would say. It's 100.
Reputation of being just old people.
Yeah, it was, and I buried them all. I am the priest that buried them all, which was a great honor for me, like I said, to be able to do that. And I think one of the things, this is what would kill me as a priest, you know, I would have a few of the older, they were all passed away. You know, and it wasn't because it's Christ's priesthood. It's not me. It's not about Father Gregory. It's not about Father Zechariah. What we're doing, at least I'll speak for myself, as weak as a icon I am, but Christ's priesthood energizes through us and Father Philip, the priests that are there. And the old timers kind of really sense this. And it wasn't necessarily the person, right? But they loved the priesthood because they understood in the priesthood is Christ. And they just knew that. You know, which is hard for me to wrap my mind around as a convert. But you see, I'm crying because I'm thinking of them. You made me think of them. There's numerous. You know, as they aged, and I remember being with them, as they're passing, and they'll just grip your hand, and they a few of them, they just look, and they say, Father, please, don't leave. Don't leave. And you're like, okay, now what am I supposed to do? I want to leave because sometimes Pueblo just seems like it stinks, you know, and I'm sick of being a Bessemer, and I'm sick of all of this stuff. And then you have them just from their heart. Don't leave, please. You're like, okay. You know, yes, I'm here a little bit longer. You know. And there I am still. And probably, so it's a mixture of that, your thing. It was Father Addy. He said, wherever you go, make it paradise. Father Zechariah, that's how you're going to survive. And it's true. Have I made it paradise? I don't know. But I've tried to do the best I can where I am. And then the older people doing that. Oh, why did they do that to me? Maybe I would have been in a better, more lush parish by now if it wasn't for them. Anyway, I'll blame them. We always have to blame them. It's their fault. I'm still in public. Anyway.
Demographics like of the new people coming into the church? Are they Pueblo natives? A lot of Hispanic people in Pueblo is probably 60% Hispanic.
Yeah, we have, I think, a good mix. We have a lot. We have two young men back there. All right, Nectarius and Jagger, putting you on the spot. They traveled over with me. They were my travel companions. I think we're seeing what seems to be common across the nation. Of a lot, decent amount of young men coming in. We have some nice. Have a family is coming in, and yeah, I think we have a good mix. I mean, before it was the Slavic Church. I mean, it was the Slavic Church. I mean, they were descendants of the Russians and the Serbs that were there. Now it's not. My wife is Ukrainian. That was my bonus of being in Ukraine. I found a wife. We have a few ladies that are married to American men that are also, you know, from Ukraine or Russia. Our choir director is from St. Petersburg, Russia, because she married an American man, and we're glad she did because she is a phenomenal choir director. But primarily, it's all converts. It's all converts. So it's a completely new terrain. Which is great, but the vibe, if we can, the Orthodox word would be ethos, right? Is, you know, it's a little different. Is, you know, that old rootedness, that is very important. Again, one isn't going to be, you know, we're not going to talk about, can I buy the Philokalia, Father, right? Betty was never going to ask me that, you know, no. But Betty knew on a level. She's one of the ladies I buried, you know, on a level that was very profound. There's one, I'll share a story. It was so, there's a lady, she was actually a Lebanese, beautiful Lebanese family. And one of the most instructive things, because she got bone cancer, which is intensely painful. And she was a beautiful, I mean, blessing their house was the best thing ever. My kids were like, what are we doing? Issa's house blessing. Because it was the spread from, it was amazing. I mean, it was like, and they came from Lebanon, and the man, Bassam, I buried him not long ago, and he could tell stories. It was, I like, truly, they're storytellers. And Bassam was a storyteller. And his wife was just beautiful. Beautiful soul, so hospitable, but she got bone cancer, and she died a very painful death, you know, really. I remember one time being there praying with her, you know, and she could see that I was, you know, sorry, you know, you just, like, you know, it feels bad. Now, I still, because it's one of those things that, you know, as a priest, you just carry with you, because you're like, my gosh, I just learned so much in 1 minute from my parishioner. Almost 3 years of seminary could have never taught you this. She just grabbed my hand and goes, Father, don't worry about me. She goes, God's given me so much good. So much good. She goes, this is nothing. This is nothing. You know, and there she is, withering away from a cancer that's eating her from the bones inside out, which is very terrible. And somehow that was her disposition of heart. She had come to such a place of encounter with God where she could lay there in that suffering, on a bed of suffering and of pain. And I had to, in that moment, I was like, could I do that? And if I was honest with myself, I would say, no, I couldn't. At that point, she was much more spiritually advanced than her priest, who was supposed to be serving the altar, like, you know, and all of those things. And yet she had far outpaced me. Because she had reached a place in her heart where she could then be there. And she encountered Christ even in the midst of bone cancer. In the very marrow of your being eaten. And it was phenomenal. It's just those kind of things that kind of get burned into your memory. Journeys of the heart. Journeys of the heart. Those are the real things. Those are the real things. So, yeah. Old timers. Very different. We're great. I'm glad. There's a lot. I mean, in some sense, there's a good energy. People are excited. You know, we want to, they're sharing, you know, like, guys, how many people do we have from the local gym? It's like, it's hilarious. Yeah, so we have like 20 talented catechumens, and like a quarter of them are coming in from this local hardcore gym. So we have all these big, you know, and one of the guys is really, you know, the catechumens excited, and they're at the gym telling, "Well, man, have you ever?" And they're bringing, you know, so it's great. I mean, it's a different dynamic.
So it's building up the body.
Exactly, in more ways than one. So it's beautiful. I mean, and I guess in some sense it's the journey. You know, it's part of the journey of the church. And Christ knows. So hopefully, I can communicate as the pastor. Some of those things to those coming in of what was. And I try to do that, especially around our feast age. There is a baton. It's been passed on to us, right? And we're here because of what our ancestors, it doesn't mean necessarily our in the flesh and blood, but most importantly in the flesh and blood of Christ have left to us. And this parish already, what, going on 45 years, mm-hmm. is getting a similar experience, right? There's that passing along of that which has been entrusted. You're in Delta, and you are the custodians of the Church of Christ in Delta, Colorado. What a magnificent task that is, right? What a providence and a destiny God has meant for you here on the Western Slope. That is so full of potential and opportunity for Christ our Lord.
Maybe that's a good word.
Let's do that.
Okay. Thank you very much. So again, tomorrow morning we'll regather. We'll start about 9. I think maybe the talk won't start till 9:15, 9:20, because at 8:30 the doors will open and we'll have bagels, breakfast, coffee. Fellowship will be meeting right here in this same space. And Father, we look very much to having you with us again.
Thank you. So, thank you for your patience.
Yeah. Maybe we can stand and sing It Is Truly.
It is truly meet to bless thee, O Theotokos, Ghost, rather blessed and most pure in the Mother of our God, more honorable than ancient cherubim, and more glorious the uncompared seraphim. Without corruption thou gavest birth to God the Word. True Theotokos, we magnify thee.
Okay, one last housekeeping announcement. My wife is looking at me, reminding me. If you could take 1 second and write your name on your plastic cup, then we will use less cups tomorrow morning. You can just leave them where they are and find them in the morning. So thank you. Okay. Everyone have a safe drive home. Look forward to seeing you in the morning.
Sign, would I have to be at your house tomorrow morning?